Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Voices for Justice tonight, April 14th, 2010. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight our guest is award-winning author Susan Murphy Milano, who will be taking your call shortly. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. Again, that number is 347-838-8622. Please remember, if you want to ask a question, to choose prompt number one and to also lower the speakers behind you so we can actually hear your question. Before we introduce our guest this evening, I want to put out some special prayers and thoughts with the searchers and the investigators on the Haley Cummings case out in Florida. That is still going on, and they have yet to find her, but I truly believe that this is going to lead somewhere. So we're hoping for closure for the family there. A special thank you also to Dr. Phil and his show today for letting Amy, Duncan and Jack's mom, go on and have a voice for justice for Duncan and Jack on today's show. Media matters, and so do your voices. That is the only way we're going to have justice. And our guest this evening, Susan, knows exactly what we're speaking about, and she is your voice for justice. Susan is a respected author, nationally recognized violence expert, and she tirelessly advocates for battered women and children. In January 1989, Susan's father, a Chicago violent crimes detective, murdered her mother, and then took his own life. That very night, after discovering their bodies, Susan vowed to change the way society viewed domestic violence and broken relationships. Susan's been in numerous newspapers, magazines, radio, and television, including The Oprah Winfrey Show, Larry King Radio, ABC's 2020, CBS 48 Hours, Nightline, CNN, and also Women's Day, to name just a few. In 1993, she was instrumental in the passage for Illinois stalking law and has constantly argued for the rights of battered women and children, both through legislation and through national television appearances and print media. She is a crime scene investigation, safety, and successful prosecutions of many numerous high-profile cases. Susan is a specialist in family violence and works nationally with domestic violence programs, law enforcement, and prosecutors, providing technical and consulting services in high-risk domestic violence and stalking-related cases. In 1999, Susan was inducted into the Women's Hall of Fame for her work on behalf of women's rights. Then later in 2001, she received the Women with Vision Award from the Illinois Bar Association. She is the author of Defending Our Lives and Moving Out, Moving On When a Relationship Goes Wrong. And tonight, we are going to speak with Susan in a few minutes in regards to her new launch, her new book that just launched this Monday, Time's Up. And for many of you listening this evening, you know I normally do not cover a whole bio on a guest, but tonight I thought it was very important that all of our listeners understand why Susan writes what she does, voices her opinion, and what she does to have a voice for all of you. And in particular, most of you know, I'm a member of Seroptimus International, which means Best for Women, and domestic violence is one of our primary initiatives. So good evening, Susan. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. I was amazed listening to that. I don't often hear someone read all that, and I think you're talking about somebody else because my work's not done. So I appreciate that. That was very nice. Thank you.
And well, you're welcome, and thank you for being with us. I know that you've been very busy this week with the launch of your new book.
That's God's launch. That's how I look at that. That's not my launch. That is God taking his hand and really just getting it out there through your shows, which I very much appreciate, through all the other outlets, because really, too, what people don't realize is the Internet solves crimes. The Internet brings justice to a lot of cases. The Internet lets people know when somebody is found, where information is, where you can help for a search, where prayers can be offered. That's what
it's
about.
And it definitely recruits a lot of volunteers, as we have found on cases like Kaylee's and Amber Dubois. It rallies up folks watching and listening to the news and blogging, and brings out the Levi Pages and people of that nature to help with searches. And like you said, years ago when disaster struck your family in 89, that wasn't the case. And I'm sure that you might not want to talk a little bit about it, but is there anything in particular in that case back then that really just, it was family. It was something that was close to you and something that should have been more private, but you've made it public in order to have a voice for others going through that same stuff. So,
Well, I think while my mother couldn't help herself as a victim, and because my father was the law, she made me believe I could walk into a room and own it. She was as short as she was round. I used to say she loved food, then us kids, and then my father first. And she would, I'm tall, and I'm very blessed to be able to walk in and probably 6 feet in heels. So she made me believe I owned that room, even though she didn't own her safety and her life, and very early on. So it was very, for those that are listening that have children, they're in a relationship that is harmful. It's also toxic to the kids, and you don't see that. This is, this happened in 1989. This is, I don't want to say how old I am because it doesn't matter, but I'm old enough. And I still have secrets. I still hold things. There are things I don't talk about because I don't think anybody cares. It's nobody's business. Or in relationships, I've probably had more husbands than people change underwear in a week. I'm not proud of that. I don't say it like that, but I'm saying I would just walk. I don't know what the foundation for that is. I don't understand it because I didn't see it. I didn't have it. All we were doing from the time I was, as long as I could remember, is I was fighting to keep my mother alive, from pulling a chair up to the telephone to dialing the operator with a big pencil, because back then he had rotary phones. And when police would come in this situation, they would leave whether there was blood on my dad's shirt or not. We are all drafted into something. This was not something that, I predicted or wanted. I was an investment banker. Everything I did was for my mother, but I didn't realize how much of that, of her life, was so entrenched in mine. I would have never believed it. The day that I found her and my father, my father's partner, and officers had come to the house, more officers than I had ever seen, my father's partner said she drove him to this. And we later learned that I was going to be killed as well, but for some reason I said that God had me on a monopoly board and moved me over to the other side of town somehow, because I don't remember how I got there. And I was within minutes of having the same tragic ending, but I didn't. And I was going to have a child. I was just married, just pregnant, and my life was going in 30 seconds. But I never played there. My father always said he was going to kill my mother. My father always said, if you leave, I'm still going to kill you. If you try to divorce me, if you divorce me, I'm going to come back and get you, because that's the most dangerous time. And I was angry. I was hurt. I was mad at God. I didn't understand. But I had done things with my mother to keep her alive and understood what had to happen. And and because we had to keep quiet. So it took about a year. I went and researched. I went to court. I tried to understand the system. It didn't work. I couldn't understand why a woman wouldn't get an order of protection when it looked like she needed one. There was not enough teeth on the domestic violence laws. There's still not enough teeth on these laws anyway to begin with. But people still looked at domestic as when you say the word domestic, what do you think of? Housekeeper, a woman. So it's automatically labeling what that is rather than providing a solution and treating it as a crime. We still don't treat any of these cases as a crime. So I don't think that, I didn't wear what happened on my sleeve. I thought that because I didn't look like everybody was supposed to look that did this work, and I was very lucky in high-risk cases when somebody got shot and they survived, I went in and did kind of crazy things. I would set a guard outside the hospital door because if the person wasn't arrested yet, I would say that he's going to come back, and I wouldn't leave. I would pass out my parents' death certificates certified like they were water because I didn't look like you were supposed to look, and everybody couldn't understand how I could still walk and talk. But I was doing it for my mother, and then I think for a long time, I know for a long time, I was a little girl who couldn't save her mom. And in some kind of a – what? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Did you and your mother ever have that conversation, and did she know what you were trying to do for her all those years?
No. You don't when you're – and no one does. I mean, I can see that now, and it's a really good point. When you're – she was the right hand, and I was the left hand of her survival, of my survival. And when you're in like an area that stinks all the time, you don't know when it smells good. When you're living with someone who, we lived in a house. My father worked 4 to midnights on the shift. And our house kind of looked like a funeral parlor with the curtains, really heavy curtains. There was never any sunshine except for this little tiny bit that went in the kitchen. And I remember years later when I had a home and my girlfriend had come in and she goes, "Ooh, we need to change this. It's too dark." I said, "Well, what's wrong with it? You don't change what you don't know is wrong. If somebody doesn't point it out or you don't go, wait a minute," and have an aha moment. And I didn't see that. And I remember, I have a book coming out next year called Holding My Hand Through Hell. And it's very different. It's kind of away from what a lot of things that I've done. But I didn't understand so many things growing up. I didn't see the signs. I didn't pay attention. I didn't see how dark of an environment that we lived in. And my father had gotten sick. I was on a cruise. My mother had called me and said, "Come back here. Your father's, they're giving him his last rites." I said, "Well, I'll just finish up the vacation and just don't hold the funeral." I didn't know this man. This man, to me, was somebody who created and wreaked havoc in our lives every day and got away with it. I didn't have any respect for him. And yet, to the outside world, he was wonderful. He was somebody that was a pillar in the community. He apprehended serial killers. He was the best at what he did. I didn't know him. And I remember going, I came back. The cruise ship people, because they'd gotten the telegram, were all up in arms about, "Oh, we have to get her back. I thought, God, if you guys only knew." And I didn't say anything. I refused. We did a ship-to-shore crawl. And then I waited till I was done with my cruise. I got back, and he was still in this fetal position. He wasn't expected to make it. And the nuns were there, and I couldn't find my mom because it was a Catholic hospital, and they said they'd been praying over this wonderful man, and I should say my prayers for him, and he's done so much for the community, and we hope that God provides a miracle. And I'm saying to myself, if you guys only knew, and I'm trying to smile and be nice, and I walk out, and I find my mom, and we're by the elevator, and she looks at me, and she goes, "I still love him." Now, this man put her in the hospital. She almost died several times, beat her bloody. Beat her unconscious, raped her, that resulted in a child, did different things to her, and she's telling me that she still loves him somehow. I didn't get that. And I do now, but I didn't at the time. And I was mad at her. We went to lunch. I said, "Please, let's not even talk about this." And, because through our lives there were so many things. Everything was a secret. I would get in trouble at school because I would try to say that something was going on at home, and then the principal would expel me for the day because I was telling stories because my father beat my mother. Well, it wasn't a story. No one believed me. So then, for these children in these environments, they don't have hope. They don't know what it means to have hope. Think of Stacy Peterson and Kathleen Savio. Each woman had two children. Thomas Peterson and Christopher Peterson are the children of Kathleen Savio and Drew Peterson. Drew Peterson is in awaiting trial for the alleged murder of Kathleen Savio, wife number three in Illinois. Think about those boys. They've had two women abruptly removed from their lives. I say practice on one, perfect at the other, in my opinion, on these both these women. And their mothers have been, what kind of hope are they going to have? They're not. So the children, if you're fearful, if you don't know what to do, I'm telling you as a grown-up adult who was a child who lived in that environment, what you do, how you lay those footprints or those tire tread tracks that you can't see, they are permanent, they don't go away, and they can be so devastating. And the community and the people, you know, these two boys, I talk about the boys only because they're older. The other two children are still very young. But they're going to have to, I think, change their last names. Who's going to let them date those boys? You know, they're going to have that with them because of what somebody allegedly did. But the fact is that their mother will never return home to fix breakfast for them again, wait for her to be there when they get home from school, help with the homework. That dinner table setting that was always filled after the meal was prepared and put on the table, it ain't happening anymore.
And
these aren't stories.
How do we know, do the boys believe their father did it?
I don't know. I would get a sense, if it were me, in my opinion, that yes, that at least probably one of them might. Because it's like in a relationship, you know, you get the smell change. You understand when something is shifted, when something is different, when things aren't right. And children have an extra sense. I always had an extra sense when something was going to happen. I knew it before it would happen. And I would try to, you know, thwart off what was going on before that took place.
Was
there substance
abuse in your upbringing? With your parents, was there drinking and any drugs involved?
My mother was an all saint. She loved food, so if that's an addiction, then that was her thing. I don't look at anybody. I think that it's not the reason for it. It doesn't contribute. It's the excuse to do it. My father drank, a lot. He was an alcoholic, but he was angry whether he drank or whether he was sober. He brought the streets home with him, in my opinion, and was just an angry, violent kind of guy.
In cases like that, do you tend, because I know that you've seen a lot of cases similar to yours, do you find that the abuser, in this case your father, do you find that a large percentage actually take their own life?
You know, it's I'm not a fan of studies. I don't think that they're accurate. I don't think that we have an accurate count of how many women have lost their lives, how many perpetrators there are, how many people are really affected by this. I think that the characteristics of someone like this are kind of the same. They're narcissistic. They're clever. They have this wonderful personality. I mean, if we take Drew Peterson, he was still getting people writing to him in jail. He still had that, you know, charisma where he was dating some 20-some-year-old after Stacy Peterson, wife number four, went missing. These guys are telling the stories and doing things. They don't want you to know their secrets. They don't want you to see it. And I think that Peterson seems to be the exception because there were two women, you know, one who made it look like it was an accident and then the other one just kind of vanished. But someone who is in law enforcement, and not all police officers are abusive. Some of my best friends are police officers and judges. But,
I agree.
I have to always say that.
Yeah,
but,
and I would agree with
and I'm
you.
Not,
you know,
I, you
sometimes,
know, it's,
on, especially on this show, we tend to, it might seem as if we're beating up on investigators and law enforcement, but we're not. We're trying to have a voice for justice, and many of the times I think, especially if any of our listeners this evening saw Dr. Phil's show today, that many cases, women in particular, because let's face it, the majority of the violence is against women and girls and children. And when you've got a
But you're seeing these guys killing these guys. You're seeing these guys killing their children at record rates. You never saw that before.
But then again, we go to the same thing. Why is it that the courts, the judges, the police, nobody does anything because they think that the woman is lying, and then ultimately, in the end, like in Duncan and Jack's case, Lynchburg in Illinois, you know, she went and asked them, please don't give him rights to see the kids without visitation, you know, have
violation of the
visitation.
Order of protection 57
and,
times
and
is a violation.
But the judge lets their guard down, and
he wears them down. The abuser wore them down. Plus, that mental health expert was he needs to be feathered and tied somewhere, because I just, in my opinion, because I. You know, you're under drugs, you're under psychiatric care, you write a letter to the judge and say he'll be a good boy. How dare you? How irresponsible of your license to do that, anybody that does that. In the courts across the country, the mental health professionals have no business that a cop, a traffic cop. They need to be trained. There needs to be systems in place. There is not. The guardian ad litem that are appointed for the children across America, some are good. I know a lot of them. I deal with a lot of them. But there are a lot of them that are not prepared. Those people that evaluate both parties when they are going through a divorce have no business, because they have no adequate training. It's based on favoritism. It's based on storytelling. It's based on what they think. You can't, you know, it didn't take a huge party to marry people. You know, to the minister said, I, you know, now pronounce you man and wife. But yet it takes maybe 15 people over a course of a divorce and a custody to unmarry you. And then the process happens.
The same for adoption.
Yeah. It's a circus. So you have the ringmaster who's a judge. You have the court jesters who are the lawyers. And I'm really sorry about this, but you do. You know, not understanding, you never go, for anybody listening, you never go to a lawyer who is a lawyer that practices litigation, or a lawyer that practices accidents or tort law. You go to a lawyer who knows custody and domestic violence, because those are two different gear shifts you're driving on that bus.
It's like having lobster at McDonald's. You just want to do it.
I don't take cases where there's sexual assault, because that's not my thing. And I don't talk about the Haley Cummings, although I've participated in certain situations over the years. I'm not comfortable. That's for everybody else to do. I don't need to, drive the domestic violence, the stalking, and the homicide bus. I don't drive.
What about Susan Powell? You know, that's in my backyard here now that he's moved into Washington. But that's a prime example of a woman, just like in Stacey Peterson's case, that complained to friends and family and police occasionally on different occasions, wrote letters and everything else, only for us to be where we're at and everyone looking for Susan in the field now that the snow melted. So, you know, in a case like that, again, you've got somebody concerned about her well-being and her children's well-being, and she goes to police, and she did complain, if I ever end up dead, he did it. What more do you need?
We need Time's Up, and you need the evidentiary abuse affidavit, which is in Chapter 4. That's what you need. You need
Chapter 4.
That's what that is. And if you go on my website, or I think you put it up as well, it's the reenactment of the evidentiary abuse affidavit, because the next morning when he came back with those kids from the campfire, and it's beyond me as well why nobody checked one of the boys' diapers, because I think, I still say this, he gave the child Benadryl. This is how it happens.
Good point.
She is arguing. Maybe she's not arguing, and this is important for your listeners. When you're going to get ready to leave, it's the smell change. They can sense something. You can't change anything about what you're doing. That means not being on the computer at times that you wouldn't be on. That means not talking to somebody in a whisper that you wouldn't talk to in a whisper. You have to be very careful. You have to be 10 steps ahead of them. And in Susan Powell's case, let's say that maybe they, over the time they were having arguments, maybe, you know, after the birth of their second child, she got pregnant and, you know, they weren't going to be able to stay married. He was more abusive. She had to do something, so she began planning. But she made mistakes as she was planning. Before a woman says, I'm leaving, they need to document, like a will, which is what the evidentiary abuse affidavit is, and the other things that are in there, and pay attention to technology, but they need to do a video. So I am guessing from what I know is that somebody has screwed up on this investigation. You know, the police walk in. There's already a missing persons report. He comes back with the two boys. And like I said, nobody, if I was the investigator, I would have picked up that kid and said, let me take the diaper. Or been in the dumpster and taken the diaper, because you had to give those kids Benadryl. She had eaten a meal before that he personally served to her. That's the only plate she was given. She immediately went to bed, allegedly. And then she's not seen from. Oh, well, she doesn't take her cell phone. She doesn't take her purse. I don't know, do we take bras and underwears and different things that we need when we go? It's like Drew Peterson saying, she just took her red bikini and $25,000. That doesn't work. He was caught off guard, came back from this alleged camping trip, and police were already there because family were concerned about Susan Powell because he was missing and they were missing. But yet they come in to see a fan there. You've got to get warrants. You need time for certain investigatory and forensic things that you need to do. Time is lost immediately on these cases because you can't just go in right away. I don't know if cell phone tower records were checked or shut down or captured during a certain period of time, but there is a certain timeline on this.
So out of curiosity, because you are an expert in this field, do you think much of our issues in America, domestically speaking, I know this is an international epidemic as well, but do you think that budget restraints and staffing restraints on law enforcement is a good argument for why some investigations and some issues get swept under a rug?
Well, I like to say that if it were their child or their relative, we wouldn't hear anything but, what can we do? You know, there's a different set of circumstances. These women that are dying, like Susan Powell, are not, they're the women next door who live in your community on your block. Mm-hmm. They're the ones you go to church with. They're the ones you drop your children off with at preschool. They're not what you would call the classic, you know, battered woman. This happens behind closed doors. They're trying to do the best that they can. Technology does not help them when they try to make certain moves that could be alerted to the person that they're married to who is violent. Very interesting. I don't remember the woman's name, but it was in January. Florida, gated community. This woman just penned a book called Mr. Bean's Birthday Party. Her two twin 7-year-old boys had autism. She went by the name Frankenella. 53 years old, beautiful home. When in Florida, the book had just come out, and there was breaking news that the two children were murdered and she was murdered. Now, he had been distraught, according to everybody's accounts, over the last 6 or 7 months, maybe longer. A friend of his had died of cancer. All I saw was excuse, excuse, excuse. And nobody was saying that she had a violent history with this guy because nobody knew, because she kept it quiet. In my opinion, she was going to leave him. She was going to file for divorce. He used that being distraught, or he set it up. An abuser is very good at telling a story beforehand. I'll give an example. There was a case I just recently went on, and it was somebody that I actually knew. It was their daughter. I went to the home. We set everything up, and I was disturbed because I was told that there was a shotgun, and they had been married X amount of years, and the guy never had a gun before. All of a sudden, there's a gun in the garage. She's saying that the marriage is over and that she wants a divorce. But what he's done the week before is send his mother-in-law a letter talking about how loony his wife is. He's worried. He's worried that she's having a mental breakdown. She's not fit to be with the kids. She needs to go to counseling. She needs some medication. That's what these abusers do. When Kathleen Savio would call the police, Drew Peterson would say to people, even though he was the commander of the guys that were under him, she's crazy, we're going through a divorce, you know, she's loony. My father, I could hear him saying it. Oh, you're crazy, Roberta, you're a loony. Who the hell's going to believe you? I'm going to burn you and the house down with the kids in it, and I'm going to be able to get away with it because nobody's going to catch me. That's what I heard most of my life. So they've already set the tone. Even the night my parents died, my father's partner, I'm at the crime scene, and he said, she drove him to this. And I looked at him, and I said, well, how does one drive somebody else to pull a trigger? That isn't possible. And then he said, well, you better go have your baby and, you know, go be quiet. Otherwise, you're going to wind up like your mother. And I never forgot those words. And I said, I'm going to have the last word in this thing. He said, I don't think that's a good idea. And the threats and the different things that came with me doing this. What, and I would do live national shows, and somebody would call in, and they would take questions. How could I malign my father's good name? And I would calmly say, well, your buddy murdered her. He murdered her. When we see these obituaries or we see a lot of these news stories, you know, Michelle, you don't see anything about the mom, the woman that was killed or that's missing, really. All you see about is, oh, he was so wonderful, he played softball, if he's alive, or if it was a murder-suicide. He was such a good dad, he played with the kids, he'd come over and fix my car, give me the violin. And, you know, nobody saw, nobody heard. The reporters, the media have to do a little bit more diligence in reporting on this, and the system is so broken, it's just bombarded with people going in for information and answers, and they can't find them. It's a system that doesn't respond to the lives of women and children, as you said, Amy Lichtenberg and her sons, Jack and Duncan. And I have talked about that case since day one, because that shouldn't have happened. That was a travesty that just didn't need to happen in the first place. But there, people will say, well, it wasn't the judge's fault. There wasn't enough things in place. The person to whom Amy was married.
Well, the Amber Alert right off the bat in that
they wouldn't
case.
Do it.
It was like they delayed it because, oh, he'll come back. No, if a mother's telling you he's supposed to be home at 6 o'clock, where is he? You know, and they don't send out for 48 hours an Amber Alert knowing that they had a license plate, which we always hear, well, there wasn't a car involved. She had the license plate number and everything, and they delayed. The ball was dropped in that case. And I really, truly believe those boys could have been found a lot sooner than they were.
I believe you. I believe that also, because I don't think that they were possibly killed right away, that he spent some time with them. So they could have, you know, he bought time with his actions, and the system did as well. And what they did was they got two children killed. What these abusers do is also to take power and control. They want someone like Amy, who's a wonderful woman, to kind of live the rest of her days in just torment and hell. It's also a way of maternal deprivation, of depriving the mother of the children, of removing custody without removing custody. I'm going to have the last word. I'm going to do this. I have the power. I have control. In every one of these cases, though, we never hear how the relationship began. You don't hear that. And I had a domestic violence agency for a number of years, and people would think I was probably half-baked because I wanted to know how you met, what happened, because there was always something in what they would convey that would be assigned to me, and I got a better sense of the offender. I never looked at these cases like they were mine. I never related them to, you know, the way that I grew up. I only use it as a reference, but it's always the cases that are current that we can do something about to try to find somebody. You know, Lisa Stebbick is still missing from Illinois. Mm-hmm. Teresa Parker's body has not been found in Atlanta, Georgia. There are so many of them. And justice does, the wheels of justice do take a long time. But, you know, if you think about it, people that are even listening right now, maybe they saw something. Maybe they were in the neighborhood. They hear your show, and maybe they didn't think anything of it. Maybe that's a way to call a tip line. They don't want to get involved. We still don't want to get involved. But the Internet has become, I think, stronger than the broadcast media, because it's a community coming together and bringing justice to a voice that's been silenced. Like your
as
show.
Long as it's used the right way. I mean, there are some people out there that get hurt in the process, and I think we're going to do a future show on some of the nonprofits and folks like myself and you and many of the private investigators out there that come to CASES to lend their expertise and support and their heart. You know, many of us do have heart for this stuff, and to help and to get, you know, bashed in the media, or in your, you mentioned it one way, people tend to say, I drink the Kool-Aid. But, you know, it's about a voice for justice, and it's about having, you know, making sure that everything out of something comes out right, and protecting the individual that you're helping. And I'll tell you, the internet is great if you use it the right way, but let's face it, a lot of the cases that we deal with children and women and pedophiles and all of that takes place, a lot of it on the internet in the wrong way. And then you've
That's
got bloggers that mean well and do the right thing and say the right thing, and then you have the other bloggers that can definitely bring down defamation towards, like the Texas EquiSearch group or Class Kids and things of that nature. And so it's like, well, wait a second. You know, you guys don't even know these people. You don't know the Susans. You don't know the Tim Millers. You're not there. And then they just ramble and people believe it. And so I think if anyone's listening, domestic violence, human trafficking, kidnappings, abductions, all of the violent crimes that we are faced with each and every day, we need to think before we post, and we definitely need to think, what would you do if the shoe was on the other foot? So I just wanted to put that out there, because I am a fan. I make a living with the internet. I do, you know, I'm a publicist. We do websites, things of that nature. But you need to know how to use it appropriately, because everything you say does hurt. And I know that there's families of kidnapped children that have been brought through the ringer at times too, like the Drexels and even Amy. You know, if you read things that's going on now, why shouldn't she have a petition? Why shouldn't she go to court now? No, it's not going to bring back Duncan and Jack, but damn it, it's going to make a difference to show other judges and other law enforcement, no, there's a case out there that have their name attached to it, and we don't want any more children to be a victim. And we don't want mothers sitting back and saying, what didn't I do right for my children? So I think, you know, it's twofold. It's, you know, it's a 50-50.
But the laws were all in the books because there was bloodshed. And I think that we let too much politics into things. I always say on a tombstone, does it say on the tombstone, Democrat or Republican? No, it says the date you were born and the date you died.
It depends on which one has passed away.
But when we put our, when we take a pin, which I've done in court in front of a judge, and say, and then, you know, make my finger bleed a little bit, I say, we all bleed the same color, judge. I'm not being disrespectful. It's red. And that's the bottom line, and that's what we're not seeing. We're not seeing that this is an equal opportunity killer. This is taking the lives of families that don't deserve to die. This is taking, again, and this is not gender specific, and it does happen to men. Mm-hmm. I don't deal with men's cases. I only deal with the women and the children. But there's so many things. It's rampant. I mean, there was a case in Illinois not that long ago, a couple weeks ago, where looked like it was a home invasion. And it was cleverly calculated at 3 o'clock in the morning. There was five or six people in the house. The parents came down the stairs. They were both shot. A son was shot who was on the couch. And a daughter was hiding in the closet calling 911. I don't recall the name of the woman. But they had also captured the cell phone towers at 3 o'clock in the morning, which was unique. From that house, then to Indiana, then on to Florida, where he was captured. But they found the gun, the alleged gun, and the weapon that was allegedly used, and the items in the trash can. Then she's on the phone. She's in a custody dispute. Allegedly, the person that she was in a relationship with, the woman's father, the grandfather to the child, helps her, gets a lawyer, says, come here, move here, and we're going to help you. They stand behind their daughter, the mother, the father. The alleged boyfriend is so upset because she's moved out with his son, They've gone. She's left. She's now back with mom and dad. She's 25 years old. He's allegedly hired his best friend and says, please go kill them. Please do this hit, allegedly. Then he makes sure that he's on a casino picture or a casino video tape and says, I wasn't there. But yet when the person who was apprehended and arrested because of all this evidence, because of the cell phones, there looks like there's enough there. These people are thinking, the people who are killing, and pedophiles as well, people who commit crimes, are thinking way outside the box. They're thinking CSI type of killings.
Yeah, but even CSI comes to a closure and solves the case.
But for victims, they don't. A lot of times they don't. For victims' families, they don't. And that's why this is so important for shows like yours, for shows, other shows across the country, because it gives them a voice. But it can't be 30-second sound bites. It has to be information that people can actually use and take in. And then people that listen need to put it in their church, put it in their community, take it to the schools where they drop off their children. Pay attention because, you know, even as simple as letting your child stay over somebody's house because they're the same age so that you could have a night off as a mom. What do you really know about that family? You don't know anything. You have to be extra careful these days.
You definitely do. We work with Soroptimus, we work with the YWCAs across the country where we're actually good partners with them, as well as Women for Women International. And just today, we're doing a National Center for Missing and Exploited Children event in May, and I was speaking to a children's organization that's participating, and I mentioned the show tonight and about you. And, you know, in their organization, the girls can obtain things for doing different projects. And, you know, they have projects designed on domestic violence, but yet, you know, the show might be too dark. Well, for me, you know, my 3-year-old and 1-year, 1.5-year-old niece, they know to hold my hand because it may be wrong to some parents, but they know what will happen if they're not holding our hand, what could happen? And with domestic violence, the same thing. Why not talk about it? It's when we stop talking about things and communicating as a society that it gets out of control. And then we sit back saying, I wished I had done this. I wished I had done that. Human trafficking, domestic violence, kidnappings, all of that. Bullying, that's even gotten way out of control compared to when I was a kid. I mean, these things, if we don't talk and educate the public about them, and you don't listen and you don't call in, which reminds me, anyone listening to the show this evening, please call in to 347-838-8622. Our special guest tonight, Susan Murphy Milano. You can go to SusanMurphyMilano.com to find out more about her. But how often do you get a chance to actually call in and ask a question? Now, she's a busy gal, so call in tonight and ask her a question while we have her.
But I also answer emails at Murphy Milano.
Yeah, she does. I do call back.
I speak to everybody that I can because I think it's important because Time's Up, the book Time's Up is about prevention. In the first chapter it says fear. That stands for facilitating ending the abusive relationship. You have to be the facilitator of your everyday life, so why not work on being the facilitator of ending the relationship? Why not, again, be 10 steps ahead of them? Why not get this out there so that people that need it, it's a prevention. It's doing. It's implementing. And that's what's so important about this. And
nobody's going to be the better advocate for your own life than yourself.
That's right. That's right.
And we can educate you, and we can empower you and try to, you know, push you to be that strong person we know you can be. But in the end, we all have our weaknesses, and we all have our, okay, one more candy bar. But in real life, if the shoe was on the other foot, the only person going to get you out of it is going to be yourself.
But Michelle, also, technology has been a real hindrance for these women. GPS, cell phones, tracing, all of those things really deter. Even something as simple as calling and getting your cell phone for service switched or changed, your cable service switched or changed. Because what these companies do is they send out notices, even when you ask them not to. It's like calling up for your credit card information and getting things changed. You're being recorded, and yet things are happening, and you're being called and saying, we're sorry we're losing your business. We're sorry service is going to end on this date, when you ask them not to. So that's what's so important about this, that all the things that you wouldn't think of, you used to tell a woman to take money out of an account and go. You can't do that because the alerts in the email, what's going to come back? For every action that you take, there's a reaction. So the book talks about plan A, B, C, D. It makes you think and do outside the box. You may not be able to leave, and I don't want you to leave like the house is on fire, because you're not going to get very far. If you have a plan in place, if you have people that help you, if you have the evidentiary abuse affidavit, if you're listening, and I've been in Bellevue, Washington, I've been in Spokane, there's a lot of rural areas up there. Mm-hmm. If you, or Bellingham, I'm sorry. If you live up there and you say, well, it's just so rural, there's a church. I'm sure that they have equipment on their computer. They could do this for you. I'm sure that
there's a lot of YWCAs throughout all the
country. In Defending Our Lives, that first book, the YMCAs or YWCAs were listed all throughout the country because that's all there was. And the YWCA has the best sexual assault program for children. And agencies, you know, the number is 1-800-799-SAFE, which is for the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and then it's www.ncadv.org. But you have to have a plan. You can't just look at a list. Domestic violence is like DNA for each person. No two cases are the same. So if I take my fingerprint, Michelle, your fingerprint's not going to be the same.
Right.
And the outcome's not going to be the same. And that's what you have to do. It's work, but you can get through it. You can survive and go forward.
Do you think that people listening, and obviously, you know, this is Blog Talk Radio. Maybe if we were on CNN or something, that might be a different story. But do you think folks that purchased your book and are reading it, or men and women abusers, et cetera, are reading your book, that they will prevent somebody from successfully accomplishing what they need to do from reading your book?
Part of this is to not open Pandora's box, is to not announce you're going to end the marriage or the relationship. You have to be the best actress that you know how to be. Click those Dorothy red shoes and change the channel when they come home and go back to being whatever you need to be so that you can get out safely. It's when you start disclosing, when you start slipping up, because you don't have a plan. Nobody's ever given anybody a plan. This book is 20 years of people's lives, some people that have died and some people that are alive. It's cases from around the country where when a family lost a loved one, forensically almost, they sent me the box of their life. They sent me the journals. They told me about the person, the cases that we worked on. Something as simple as filling out a form if you have an order of protection or if you have a custody document that prevents the person to whom is related or to the children or you're married to from picking up the kids. Because these con artists can go in and talk to the secretary and say, oh, I'm here to pick up my kids. Oh, how you doing? Because nobody knows. You have to have documents notarized. You have to have copies of documents. There have been cases where he calls the place of your employment and says there's been an accident. There's been no accident. He wants to get you out, to get you where he can get you. It's about power and control. And if you see these cases that are in the news, if you see people that you know, that you work with, this is a tool to use to leave safely with your life. And if, for God forbid, you can't, it's the biggest wake-up call, because it's your insurance policy that hearsay, telling somebody else, telling a friend or a relative like Susan Powell did, who's been missing since December 7th, isn't enough. The evidentiary abuse affidavit is a permanent record. It's a permanent record of your information. It gives your social security number, your date of birth. You show a picture of the person. You say what kind of drugs they're on, what they look like. That is crucial, and it cannot be overturned by the Supreme Court. There can be not be a defense attorney who will say this is not because it's your words on the video. It's a precaution. It's a safety measure. It will save your life.
Do you think that many families or potential victims, I know many myself in my own family as well, do you think that many families can be entrusted, like if you have a mother that's really in a bind and everybody around knows what's going on, you know, what is there anything in the book that mother can do to make sure that they entrust one person within the family to know more about what's going on?
Got to do the video first. The video is first and foremost, because no court of law is going to listen to somebody that, you know, gives some account of something. It's got to be in your own words. Even if the police have never responded to your home, even if you have no report, no medical report, you can talk about the abuse, you can discuss the threats, you have this document witnessed and notarized. Like I said, you can do it at a church, you can do it where you work, and the book takes you through it. It gives you a form, a blank form, and one filled out. And then there's also an example of the evidentiary abuse affidavit, how to read that under 6 minutes. This is not to tell your life story. It's to briefly say, if something happens to me, this person did this. If Susan Powell had had this, or any number of the other women, if they had this, the person responsible would be arrested immediately. It costs counties and states millions of dollars to investigate. How much money has been spent on Drew Peterson? How much money has been spent on Joshua Powell? Why? If she's able to do this, And basically words from the grave, it's your insurance policy that should something happen to you. But it also should be your wake-up call on what you should do, how you should plan. You know, the night before you're leaving, it's possible the kids could have a flu. What's plan B? It's possible that the neighbor's going to come down and say, oh, what are you doing? Can I help you? Oh, sure, yeah, we're just taking a little trip. What's plan B? It's possible. It lists every scenario you could think of, or most, that are going to happen to you that you have to be prepared for. Oh, my goodness, he's not going to get served with the papers like the lawyer promised me. What's plan B, even though you paid a lawyer money? And they said, we're going to have the process server serve him at work at such and such time. Oh, I didn't get to the court on time. I'm sorry. What's plan B? And then
does the book Time's Up offer anything as far as resources and phone numbers?
It's all in there. Everything's at your fingertips. And my goal is across the country to get these on flash drives so you can put them on your key ring. The book will be on a flash drive, hopefully, in every state across the country. When a woman goes in for an order of protection, she gets this. Because you can't hand somebody, you cannot hand somebody a sheet of paper and say, here's the rules of the road, sweetie. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way.
No.
So.
Somebody in the chat room is asking, doesn't this book warn the predators too? I think we covered that a little bit. Any other thoughts on that?
I crossed in the middle of that. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problem. Doesn't the book warn the predator too?
Oh, no. No. It's a book for you to think out. My other books don't warn the predators. Moving Out, Moving On doesn't warn the predators. And predators come in all forms. She has to have a plan. And this is a way to hold the system accountable as well. It's a way to kind of backdoor and get laws passed for women like Amy across the country, women like Susan Powell across the country. So there's an even playing field when a woman goes into court, has no lawyer, has no ability to have custody of her children, and stories are made up and things are turned around on her. This saves lives. This is not about...
The videotape is a great idea. Like I said, I know...
And letters. You know, when you're leaving with your child, you need to leave and drop off a letter or have somebody do it at the police station so he doesn't say that the kids were kidnapped. You need to switch somebody's car if you have OnStar so that the car's not reported stolen. You need to turn off your cell phone. These are things we don't think about. All of that stuff is in the book. This is about having a plan. This is about facilitating the ending of the abusive relationship. It takes work. It doesn't happen overnight, but it is possible. A lot of women are success thrivers. And this is not just something that was put together. This is based on people who actually did a lot of this, actually went through this, worked through the situation that's in the book, and they're now living different lives somewhere else. And some of the but there's also the address confidentiality program in there. There's a lot of things that people don't think of. Again, it's not pack a bag and throw it out in the bush and hope he doesn't find it. It's how do you, and it's stuff. You can't worry about stuff. Photographs and things, if you can try to get certain things out of the house or have somebody take them, but that's not worth your life.
Right.
It's, and those things are important.
We have a few minutes to our listeners and the folks in the chat room. If you have any questions for Susan, please call 347-838-8622. We have a couple minutes. Anything else in the book? Where can our listeners obtain a copy besides your website, SusanMurphyMilano.com? Can they purchase this at Barnes & Noble and bookstores that?
Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. They can actually go to the library if they don't have the resources and ask the library to order it for them, and they will do that. This also, you know, threats make against your well-being. It also teaches you how to collect evidence basically on the fly. It predicts and shows you what the abuser is going to do and what kind of moves they're going to make. It just gives you and empowers you and teaches you, like I said, the best thing to be 10 steps ahead of the offender.
We would love to put it on our site. I know Delilah is in the chat room. Send us over an ad or something. We'll be happy to put it on our website at nwcat.org. We talk a lot about domestic violence, kidnappings, abductions, as well as human trafficking. So however Soroptimus can help get the word out about the book, let us know. And we're also, like I said, throughout the United States, connected with many YWCAs throughout the country. So however we can help get the book in the right hand, I think every little step.
Well, maybe the Soroptimus can help me with the manufacturing of the flash drives. That would be wonderful. And
hey,
we can get them all over the country. We can get them all over the country. That's what we need. Again, it stops.
Send us the proposal, and I'll get it in the right hands.
All right. You've got it. We'll do that.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Susan, for joining us. Also, thank you to everyone in the chat room. I see Annie. Annie actually was on one of our shows. She goes out and teaches on
self-defense,
and awesome program that was as well. So visit some of our recent shows. Our effort here is to get the word out, keep our communities safe if we can. But as long as we're educated, we're doing our part, you know, and that helps me know that we've been able to help at least one person. But thanks again, Susan, for joining us. Unfortunately, time's up, but the book's not up. So get your book at SusanMurphyMilano.com. Go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and get your copy. And hang on to it. You never know. Susan might be in your neighborhood where she can sign it. Our next show is going to be May 8th. We have Melissa Baum, Dawn Drexel, and Dr. Dale Archer will be on the show. It's a Mother's Day special that's not so special this year. It's Mother's Day, Have You Seen Our Daughters? So until then, I'm going to leave you with this thought as I always do. What are you doing to have a voice against violence? It only takes 1 minute to have that voice. And I thank Susan for having that voice, and thank you. From Soroptimus, what we say to women like you, thanks for being the best for women.
Thank
you, everyone,
for
listening, and we'll hopefully see you on May 8th. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.